Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from The James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.
This podcast was recorded Thursday, April 30th at 10:31 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like the country will remain unified for more than 12 hours after an attack on the President of the United States. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who point to over-the-top rhetoric of their opponents without listening to recordings of their own over-the-top political rhetoric. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, the Ohio property tax abolishment movement is in trouble. But first, let us remind you, at least for the next 12 to 14 hours, it is still April. We have a long way to go before Election Day. Most people who do not listen to this podcast, this political podcast, are more worried about killing any remaining dandelions on their lawns and finalizing their summer travel plans. But there is an important election just around the corner, even if it's a wide corner. Ohio will elect a new governor and will decide who will represent it in the U.S. Senate. And we have a new poll out that gives us a snapshot of what voters are thinking as April turns to May, and it is pretty interesting. The big headline out of the Bowling Green State University poll is that the governor's race is a dead heat. The BGSU poll shows Republican Vivek Ramaswamy and Democrat Amy Acton are basically tied. Ramaswamy has 48% support. Acton has 47%. That one-point margin is well within the poll's 3% margin of error. In the race for U.S. Senate, the same poll shows that race is still basically tied. John Husted, the incumbent, has a three-point lead over his Democratic challenger, which sounds odd, Democratic challenger Sherrod Brown. That three-point lead is still within the poll's margin of error. Given the political angst in this country, our polarization, it really should come as no surprise, but the poll has to give Democrats hope, and Republicans pause that deep red Ohio could see tinges of blue after November's election. Joining us to dissect this poll is Bowling Green State University political science professor Robert Alexander. He directs the BGSU poll. Professor Alexander, welcome back to Snollygoster.
Thanks for having me, Mike, but now you've got me thinking about when I can cut my grass next.
Mine's getting long, too, but it's been raining the past few days, at least here in Columbus.
It's that timing is tough.
As an aside, Robert, everybody's lawn looks great in May.
There you go.
And we could say Democrats always look good in May in Ohio.
which gets me
to this. 8 years ago at this time, polls had Democrat Richard Cordray with a lead over Mike DeWine. Does this poll really indicate where voters will be come November?
Oh, boy. So, yeah, it's interesting. Kind of in your lead up, you talked about a lot of people are not really clued into what's happening as far as Ohio politics go. But there's certainly a class of folks that are paying a lot of attention. And within hours of the poll dropping, we had thousands of downloads of the poll because people are dissecting every mm-hmm. little bit.
Yeah.
And Ohio polling has always been really difficult, especially and also modeling, you know, who's going to turn out to vote in November. And given kind of the way the winds have blown in the last few presidential election cycles, where Republicans have, and particularly Donald Trump, have done really, really well, that becomes a big question mark. One of the things that I would say about our poll is that we are doing registered voters here. This is not likely voters, it's registered voters. And we really did, we weighted the poll essentially 11 points to the outcome of that 2024 election, which we do not think will be who turns out to vote in November. And with that,
let me ask you that. So who do you think will turn out? It's hard to tell, of course, but who do you think will turn out? Will it be less than 11 points in favor of Donald Trump?
It most likely, especially in a midterm election, the out party is always the party that's more motivated to vote. We did ask that question in this poll, and we found that Democrats were, you know, almost two to one more motivated to vote than usual. And that's a big tell, suggesting that they will be more likely to turn out to vote than Republicans are right now. So I think that is one tell there. We'll do a couple of polls in the fall and we'll ask more of those types of questions to try and model what that likely electorate is. But if past is any prologue in midterm elections, the out party is always the party that is a little bit more stimulated to get out there and get to the polls.
Yeah, that's what usually happens. And one of these days, I'll have you back on. We're just going to talk about the science of polling. So I think our audience would find that very interesting, how you all go about waiting and selecting voters and coming up with questions and writing questions. But that's for another day. Let's get to the governor's race. It's tied, as I said, and it is the spring. What is that on a macro level? What does it show you about? These are two relative newcomer candidates. Amy Acton, of course, well known because of her role during the early days of the coronavirus and COVID pandemic. Vivek Ramaswamy, businessman, ran for president briefly, fairly well known, but they're not Mike DeWine, who's been around for a long time. What does this poll tell you about these two newcomers and how they're faring so far in this campaign?
That's a really good way to look at it, because neither of them have held public office before or elected office before. And so it is a little bit difficult to kind of figure that out. In Ohio, I would say one of the markers of Ohio politics is populism is something that is really near and dear to most voters. And both Acton and Ramaswamy, I think, are trying to hit a populist tone. Both have backgrounds not out of politics, one as a doctor, one as a businessman. We asked some questions to kind of drill a little bit deeper about that. Some interesting kind of findings from that perspective is that medical experts actually have pretty high favorability in the state of Ohio. Businessmen don't. We asked some questions about whether or not, you know, your support or your opposition to Amy Acton is affected by her background as our former director of public health. And we didn't find much, you know, of anything there. Same with Ramaswamy. So it seems to be a wash what their backgrounds are. But I suspect that they'll probably lean into that as it suits them kind of moving forward. But yeah, I mean,
and their opponents are going to lean into it in the opposite direction. We already see the ads out that Ramaswamy has calling it shut down Amy because she shut down the state. Now, Governor DeWine, of course, shut down the state, not the health director. But you can see how they're both candidates eventually are going to try to portray them. I mean, Acton has portrayed Ramaswamy as an out-of-touch billionaire, and Ramaswamy is portraying Acton as shut down Amy.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, and even they are not as well known as you might think. And that's also something, you know, for the listeners of this podcast who are really clued into a lot of what's going on in politics, you might find it hard to believe that, you know, 40-some% don't have a favorable or unfavorable view of Amy Acton. So there's a lot to kind of paint her with, positive or negative. Mm-hmm. And Ramaswamy is actually a little bit more well known, and what people think of him isn't as positive as it is with Acton. So, you know, again, there's definitely room there. Even John Houston in the Senate race.
Yeah.
There's a lot of folks that haven't made up their mind one way or another, even though he's held state elective office for a number of years here in Ohio.
On the governor's race, where do the independents fall? Because it's kind of where it's going to fall. You know, you think the independents in Ohio, they drift back and forth. They'll vote for Obama. They'll vote for Trump. And a lot of goes on the attitudes toward the economy, how things are going. Where do the independents fall in the governor's race?
Well, kind of a couple of overarching themes. One is Ohioans are just not happy. They're not happy about a lot of things.
Yeah.
The economy and inflation and tariffs, a lot of the Trump policies they're not really pleased with. And that's particularly true. I mean, we expect that of Democrats, but independents have really turned against Trump as well. And so some of the policies that we've asked about Trump, even though he won't be on the ballot, he really will be. And so, you know, whether that's enough to motivate folks to get out there and vote, those independents, is a big, big issue. But I mean, when you're finding $4 a gallon for gas and people are worried about inflation and the economy is their number one issue by far, I think that is going to motivate some folks. And Acton right now is doing pretty well with the independents. Republicans have stayed lockstep with Ramaswamy and generally with Trump himself as well. But Democrats are also lockstep against Trump, pro-Democrat. Whether they turn out to vote in the kinds of, you know, what they need to vote like during that Obama era is important because they certainly have bled a lot over the last, 12 years or so.
Yeah, the turnout number is always is the key for Democrats in Ohio, really across the country, but certainly here in Ohio, given the mm-hmm. demographics here. Yeah, you mentioned Trump is holding steady. His approval rating is at 46% in YouPoll. That's about 8 to 10 points higher than it is nationally. So, you know, he's still as divisive as he can be, and, you know, he loses support around the edges. You know, a near majority still support give him a job approval rating, a positive job approval rating.
Well, you know, he's still negative six. You know, he's underwater as far as the approval goes. His favorability is not real strong. It's pretty much I think this is our fourth poll, I think, since his second term, third or fourth poll. And we've just seen it steadily decrease. A little bit of a jump from our October poll, but, you know, that's also within the margin of error. So, you know, that could be a little bit of noise in the background. But, yeah, Ohioans are not real pleased with him. And I like to point out
but they're not super mad at it. I mean, it's a wash, it kind of seems. It's like he's got a floor and that his base will stick with him. And then, you know, then it moves a little bit in the middle.
So an interesting way that we ask this question, we've been asking, like, you know, do you regret your vote for president in each of our polls? Mm-hmm. This time we asked it a little bit differently. We gave people a little bit more leeway. So we, like said, not at all, to some degree, a great deal. And when we asked it in that direction, we found that 15% of Trump voters did regret their vote, at least to some degree, compared to just 6% of Harris voters. So we're finding that, you know, it is chipping away at those margins. Again, Republicans, and really you asked that question about independents. It's independents where you're seeing that movement.
And that 15% could sway an election because he won by 11. So
100%. Yeah. And not only in who they choose. And again, elections are always about choices. And, you know, Democrats have not put together very, very favorable, positive candidates since Obama in the state. Yeah. So, you know, if your choice is between Trump and somebody that you're not real enthusiastic about, maybe we're not so surprised that we're seeing, you know, 10, 11 point margins for Trump. When you put somebody that's a little bit more palatable to the Ohio voter, like a Sherrod Brown, who way outperformed Kamala Harris in the state, then, you know, you have a more competitive race. It's not just about the personality. It's also about the choices that you have as a voter.
And that first choice is whether to vote at all. And if you're not motivated, if you voted for Trump 2 years ago and you don't like the way he's doing, you might just stay home. And that would help, in theory, the Democratic candidate. Looking at the primary opponents, Ramaswamy does have two primary opponents. Now, one has been disqualified from the ballot. The two primary opponents, Heather Hill and Casey Putsch. Heather Hill has been disqualified from the ballot pending a court decision. They trail badly. Each individually, they trail badly. But combined, they get a quarter of the GOP vote. What does that tell you?
Well, I mean, you know, Ramaswamy, there's been some really interesting developments in Ohio politics in recent years, and the fact that the Ohio Republican Party essentially endorsed Ramaswamy months ago, or maybe a year ago, is one of those changes. Usually they like to stay out of it. And so that there's still, you know, a little bit of resistance, reluctance, at least that we're seeing in our poll, to Ramaswamy. I think, you know, it almost kind of comes back to, you know, there are a lot of Democrats that were, I guess, frustrated with Harris is just kind of being anointed without a true primary campaign. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people don't like to have choices made for them. So I suspect that there's at least a little bit of resistance just from that reason alone. How far, you know, Putsch is able to kind of move those numbers up for himself may give us a little insight into, you know, how many people will stay home or be motivated to vote, and particularly Republicans in November. I mean, we asked this question about, you know, if Putsch isn't your nominee, because one of the things we've seen is that his supporters are pretty fervent supporters. Would you stay home?
We should remind our listeners who Casey Putsch is. A very, very, let's put it politely, a very far right candidate. He has posted some pretty racist things on social media. He is very controversial. He has posted racist things on social media. He is very far right. So he got 12% in your poll, and then you asked the question, if he doesn't win, what happens? And that was very interesting.
Yeah, and the whole point of that really was to kind of see, like, how fervent are these supporters? And we found a pretty significant number of them, you know, would not support Ramaswamy kind of moving forward. So I think that again, kind of is another little tell that, how motivated are these Republicans to get behind Ramaswamy, somebody who kind of was anointed, really hasn't been part of Ohio electoral politics, ran for president of the United States. I mean, is he somebody who's going to stick around? Is this really a job that he wants? Or is he somebody who's more of a show horse than a workhorse? I mean, Mike DeWine is somebody who is a details person, who's, mm-hmm. who's getting into the weeds with things. You know, it's interesting because he's ticked off a lot of Republicans, not just Democrats. So Ramaswamy is a very different type of candidate than Mike DeWine is. So how that's kind of playing out, I think, is, a big part of the story and potential for success on Acton's part. The fact that DeWine came out and defended Amy Acton over those comments about shutting down Ohio, I think is pretty abnormal in today's politics.
Yeah. Moving on to the U.S. Senate race, as we said, John Houston leads by 3 points in this poll, still within the margin of error, but a little bit more of a gap than what Ramaswamy had. And you mentioned that, I find this, I don't know what to make of this race. There are two, for insiders, these are two well-known candidates who've been in office a long time. Of course, Sherrod Brown much longer than John Houston, and Houston's been in office for 2.5 decades. So what does this poll tell you about this race? Are people really passionate about this race, or they just think this is like same old Democrat, Republican, I'll pick one, I'll come November?
I think to your point that a lot of people are not, that attuned to what's happening right now is a piece of it. But I also think it speaks to the heavy partisanship that we find in the state and the tilt rightward in the state. I mean, that so many people don't really have an opinion of Houston and yet are willing to back him just because he's got the R beside his name, I think tells you a lot. He is the incumbent senator, but like you said, it's kind of an odd race because Sherrod Brown has been associated with the U.S. Senate for quite a while as well. So I think, a big question might be, are there coattails with Brown? Is, what's going on, at the top of the ticket for governor? Does that hurt Republicans downtick? I mean, there's so many kind of inside baseball pieces to kind of think about. Is there an initiative on the ballot, on property taxes or something else come November? I mean, all of those little things are going to add up. I just can't imagine that either of those races are going to be, blowout races. I think they're going to be pretty close, regardless of what our poll actually says.
Yeah, I found it odd that 24% had neither a favorable or unfavorable opinion of Sherrod Brown. I thought that number was a bit high for a guy who's been at the top of the tickets in Ohio politics for quite some time.
Who are these people, right? You would think that you have opinions on folks, but it could also be that maybe they're just not sure. Maybe there's some things that they like about them and some things that maybe they don't like about them. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's, and Brown is an interesting Democrat because he's, you wouldn't look at him on the national stage and say he's one of these fiery woke liberals, right? So he's played to that populism in the state, and there probably are things. And indeed, we saw in his last election that there were folks that voted for Donald Trump, turned around, and then voted for Sherrod Brown. And so I think that might explain a little bit of, that uncertainty about Brown. So yeah, people are more complicated than we often like to give them credit for. Again, we have binary choices at election time, but most people are not that binary. They have lots of different thoughts when they actually think about various topics.
What are they thinking about John Houston? 40% say they have neither a favorable or unfavorable opinion of John Houston. Now, he's been Speaker of the House. He's been Secretary of State. He's been Lieutenant Governor. But I equate him to kind of Rob Portman. Lengthy, accomplished public service career, but he doesn't excite people. The average person, John who? you know?
Well, and for many politicians, that works really well. You know, I mean, you know, he's not somebody who's wants to be in the public spotlight per se. And many people, well, here's a little bit of political science. Here we go on the Snollygaster.
Okay.
Is that the more we know about politicians, you ready for this? The less we like them.
It pays that's our brand.
To say too much.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but I guess that's the thing. I mean, I don't think either of these candidates, Brown or Husted, are going to tremendously excite voters to vote for them. Now, they might vote against what's going on in the country in the case of, you know, I think that's what Sherrod Brown is hoping for. And they might just fall in line and vote for John Husted, being given the Republican leaning of this state. So it could be.
I had a student once describe it this way, and I thought it was great. Thank you, Dexter. He said, you know, you got to provoke voters. Sometimes you got to provoke them. You got to, you know, put your finger in their eye and get them excited and agitated about something. And, you know, negative partisanship today, like hurting the other guy rather than liking my guy, has certainly been a big motivator for a lot of folks out there.
Real briefly, because we're running short on time here, but you dug into the whole property tax thing, and we'll talk about that in a few moments on the podcast, where that effort stands. It's spoiler alert, it's not looking good to repeal or abolish property taxes. But you asked people if property taxes were too high, and not surprisingly, they said yes. But then you asked about public service, you know, local services you got. You asked about consolidating government, consolidating state universities. What was the theme that emerged from your survey results there?
Oh, fascinating. So like we actually did a little test where we asked half of our sample about property taxes. You know, do you want to eliminate them completely, significantly limit them, and so on? And we got an answer there. And it was like 56% were like, yes, let's, you know, limit them significantly. But the other half of the sample, we gave them a little bit of information on the front end and said, okay, here's what property taxes pay for. If these property taxes were abolished, this is likely what would happen to those services, and taxes elsewhere might increase X percent. And with that group, it declined by 13%. And so with a little bit of information, yeah, of course, we find that people are a little less receptive to getting rid of property taxes. Now, all of that said, when we asked about individual services provided through property taxes, people were overwhelmingly favorable toward those services like fire and EMS, your public libraries. I mean, to think about 86% of Ohio voters across the aisle that support a particular service, I mean, public libraries are where it's at. EMS is where it's at. Even public schools, two-thirds of voters. And so this means you've got Democrats and Republicans agreeing on this. It's kind of like I hate Congress, but I like my congressperson.
Yep.
You know, I don't like my taxes, but I like my public services.
Yeah. We hate taxes. We complain about them. But when we offer solutions to fix the problem, whether it's consolidating government or cutting services, then it goes the other way. So the devil is always in the details. Robert Alexander, Bowling Green State University political science professor, director of the BGSU poll. Thanks again for joining us on Snollygoster.
Thanks. I'm going to go mow my lawn.
Get rid of those dandelions. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
You know, every day on Up First, NPR's Golden Globe-nominated morning news podcast, we bring you three essential stories. At the heart of each story are questions. What really happened? What really mattered? What happens next? At NPR, we stand for your right to be curious and to follow the facts. Follow Up First wherever you get your podcasts and start your day knowing what matters and why.
Welcome back to Snollygoster. Before we continue, we want to ask you a favor. If you like what you hear, please give us a good review on Apple Podcasts or whatever platform you are using. And don't forget to tap that follow button so you can get every episode as soon as it drops. It is time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past half fortnight. This week, it goes to leaders of the effort to abolish property taxes in Ohio. The group needs to collect hundreds of thousands of signatures to get their amendment on the ballot in November, and they're not really close. Here are the numbers. Now, stay with me. They have to collect some 415,000 valid signatures of registered voters. Because so many of those signatures turn out to be invalid, groups generally have to collect double that number. So let's say in this case, they have to collect 700,000 signatures. Well, the group last week held a very odd news conference and announced with great fanfare that they have collected some $300,000. And they have 2 months left to get the rest of them. Now, this group has put the fear of God in the hearts of local and state officials that they might succeed and immediately cut off $24 billion in tax revenue that largely supports schools and local services. But they appear to lack the organization to pull it off. They have not raised enough money. They have not hired professional signature collectors, firms that are really necessary to get on the ballot here in Ohio. So it does not look like this question is going to be on the ballot in November. That could surprise us, but right now it's not looking good. But here is what they have done. They have put this issue front and center. They have collected more than a quarter of a million signatures. More than a quarter of a million Ohioans are signing on the line saying, get rid of property taxes completely. This issue will not go away. If this amateur group does not succeed, a more professional anti-tax group with more resources will at some point. They may not eliminate property taxes, but they may limit them severely. That has happened in many other states. So, for that, regardless of their inexperience and odd tactics, the group pushing the property tax abolishment question gets our Snollygoster of the Week award. That will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. For our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.